Bleiben Sie aktiv und zusammen mit uns nah am Marktgeschehen. Alle Episoden finden Sie auf www.chartered-investment.com/podcast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Funds in 15 Minutes. Today, I have a dialogue partner, which is Attilio Veneziano from Attilio Veneziano and Partners. Attilio, hi, how's it going?
Hi, David. Thank you for having me here. And also thank you for having this episode in English, because my German is not as good as you would like it to be.
My very pleasure, Attilio. So let's kick right into it, given that we do have 15 minutes for some questions. So, Attilio, you've built a career around European fund regulation and in particular cross-border distribution. So what originally pulled you into this niche and what keeps it interesting today?
I don't think I ever told you, David, but I started as a criminal lawyer 20 years ago now. And my first move was from south of Italy to London, where I wanted to get experience with one of the first frameworks for the European arrest warrant. And at the time it was very exciting, was one of these attempts to harmonize rules across Europe. And the Italian community wasn't very active in the criminal world yet, but was very active instead in selling foreign funds domestically. And so that was the transition. The reason why I liked it is because the single market remains a composition of different states that have different customs, different languages, right? And so there is a lot that needs to be adjusted also from that perspective when you want to tackle Europe and distribute funds. And so that is what was very interesting to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Attilio, I recall that we almost know each other for about 10 years as of now, and know that you're predominantly or with a core working with US fund managers, which is quite interesting. So as a founder of a regulatory boutique advising managers on accessing Europe, what's the most common Europe misconception you hear from non-EU fund managers?
Yeah, in this case, it would be the Americans, right? And I think that the most common one is that ESMA is going to sue them, right? And that's because in the US, you have this approach of the SEC of regulation by enforcement, right? Where basically there is lawsuits are used as a way to clarify policy or regulation, which isn't the case in Europe. And so basically Americans tend to approach Europe as if it was the US, right? And I think that basically Europe is completely different as looks at the spirit of the law rather than the letter. And it takes a lot of convincing to these counterparties that basically they can act differently when they look at Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's delve a little bit further and deeper into that topic. So in your renowned latest edition of your renowned newsletter, Time to Fast Forward, you release an article with the headline, Europe thinks you're too poor to be financially literate. What specific policy choices make you say Europe is still wedded to you can't be sophisticated unless you're wealthy?
Yeah, so this is a sticky point, David, because what I've seen is that there is some restlessness around the client categories in Europe, right? But basically, there is no real movement from this dichotomy of professional and retail, right? And so what I see is that within the retail category, there are different appetite for risks, different levels of financial literacy and fluency, but those are all sort of leveled to the lower point, if that makes sense to you. And I think that this is as a way of protecting the market, which is understandable, but at the same time, there are needs of financing for certain small and medium enterprises in Europe, and that's a need that is very clear in Europe. And so continuing with this dichotomy hinders the ability of these firms to get access to a broader audience of retail investors, really.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you touch upon one of those big issues on the European policy agenda, which is the retail investment strategy. So let's quickly focus on that one, saying that the opt-out changes under MiFID II sound like a minor revamp and not really a reform. So from your perspective, which part matters most in practice? The watered-down wealth threshold or the fact that the education and training can't be combined with actual portfolio size?
I think that you hit both of the spots, right? I think that basically the threshold is an issue because basically you have to be very rich to be considered a professional investor, and also the fact that financial literacy seems not to be playing any role at all. And that's not necessarily the case in other jurisdictions and in other environments, also outside of Europe. And what is interesting is that the retail investment strategy was targeting the right piece of legislation, MiFID, because there was an earlier attempt with IFNLD2 to introduce a new category of professional investor, the one that could invest 100,000 euros and that could make a statement of understanding the risks of the investment. But that was scrapped pretty quickly and didn't make it to the end of the revamp of IFND, in my view, because that wasn't really the right piece of legislation to modify. And that would have represented a good approach to client categorization, because you could say that investors that can invest up to 100,000 euros are still retail, but nevertheless more with better ability to self-direct themselves into investments.
Yeah. That is actually your argument is basically directing us to one of those very en vogue topics actually at the moment. So you already considered that. So Brussels is effectively at the moment nudging global alternatives toward the LTIF as the mass market ticket. From your perspective, that's true. Is this investor protection or basically an industrial policy move to channel capital through EU preferred wrappers, if at all?
I think it's the latter. I have to say that I like LTIF, right? So we worked with LTIFs in distribution for clients already in the first iteration of the regulation, right? And I agree that LTIF is what Brussels, if you like, wants to push. Also because the LTIF as a concept is one of the darlings of the Capital Markets Union, right? And the Commission and the other policymakers made a great job with the second iteration. And now, basically, we are at a point where anything that has LTIF on the label raises money, right? So which bodes very well for the building of a brand that can be as global as the UCITS. And this being said, there is a downside to that, because I've heard that some managers put into LTIFs more liquid type of securities, and so they water down the alternative type of proposition that is behind the Altitz. But it's a success, and I think that this is something that all the non-European or even the European alternative managers have to consider as the way to capture the widest audience in Europe.
Absolutely. Attilio, you knew that there's no way around that we spend at least a minute on Italy, basically as the counter example, so to say, the 100k euro semi-professional route via advised investing. So from your perspective, how big a game changer is that for real fundraising, and what hurdles still make it feel retail in practice, actually?
Yeah, I think that Italians looked probably at the draft of the IFMD that I was mentioning, right? Mm-hmm. And basically, there is a double option. You either have €500,000 to invest, or you have 100,000, but you are in the context of receiving investment advice, right? Which deviates a little from the version of professional investor contained under IFMD. I do think that it's a game changer for all the managers who have already established relationships in Italy with wealth managers and private banks, because those are the channels where this type of new client category makes sense. At the same time, even though the passporting process for this traditional alternative investment funds is sort of simplified, because you don't have a process to do directly with Consob, you will still have to produce a prep kit and potentially offer also local facilities. So this is what makes it feel like retail, if you like.
Yeah. You just called it, and that makes me always a little bit afraid when we talk about semi-professional investors. Indeed, the Prips kit burden that still persists, because the semi-professional isn't really EU recognized. So, what's the real cost of that? Administrative friction, liability risk, distribution reluctance, or what is it from your perspective?
It's funny that you mentioned liability, right? Because I've read recently that BlackRock was caught and slapped on the wrist for some not very accurate figures in their PRIPS kids. I think that it goes down to how much or how long is your view towards Europe, because PRIPS kids there are providers that can do it. The Mancos could probably lift that piece of the work for you, but that means having a longer term approach towards Europe, and so that doesn't suit well managers who want to fly in and out without establishing any type of routes in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, understood. So, Attila, we somehow slowly moving towards the end of the podcast, there's one question, if not some closing statements, of course, I would definitely want to address. It was all pictured in the frame of US versus Europe. So you've contrasted US accredited investor logic with Europe's activity and wealth logic, and just crystal ball a little bit. If you could import one element from the US approach into EU rules, what would it be, and what would you keep European?
I've lived in the US for 8 years now, and I can tell you as a European that Americans are much more ambitious also when it comes at their wealth compared to Europeans, right? And so the motto is that you win some, you lose some, but you stay in the market, right? And over time, that's the better outcome, if we want to use something that the Brits like a lot as a frame of reference. If there was something that I would import is this, because basically what I see that is one of the limits of Europe is that Europe wants capital markets as vibrant as the US, but it doesn't want investors to run risks. And that's not part of the capitalistic approach that is behind the capital markets in the US. So if there was something that I would bring in Europe, it's this ambition and also the fact that, you know, you can lose some and that's part of the game.
Yeah, very interestingly to hear, D'Attilio. So we're closing our Funds in 15 Minutes episode with my dear guest, D'Attilio Veneziano. D'Attilio, where can our audience hear more from you and your work in particular?
Thank you, David. We run a newsletter on Substack that you mentioned already that is called Time to Fast Forward. It's out every Friday. And we take a deep dive in regulation on fund distribution, but also digital assets, which is the new thing that will have a lot of impact also on fund distribution. And then we have a YouTube channel called the European Fund Business, where we give a video version of this content. I think that as opposed to fund in 15 minutes, this is fund in 20 minutes because yeah. We went a little bit overboard. And thank you for having me here, David.
Thank you so much, D'Attilio. Dear audience, this was Funds in 15 Minutes with D'Attilio Veneziano. Thank you.
Dieser Podcast dient ausschließlich Informationszwecken. Die besprochenen Inhalte stellen weder eine Anlageberatung noch eine Empfehlung oder ein Angebot zum Kauf oder Verkauf von Fondsanteilen dar. Bitte treffen Sie Investitionsentscheidungen ausschließlich auf Basis offizieller Verkaufsunterlagen.